wasn't sure I'd ever step out and do my own thing. It took this place to do it.
And it is Virginia Tech. This isn't some rinky-dink-ass program.
I don't know if I could follow that one up.
I'm yelling into the void, and that's what I like doing.
Pete, nobody's looking at your tweets.
We're going to recruit our footprint, and we're going to work our tails off to bring those Virginia kids to Blacksburg.
Those situations are the worst when you are on top of another guy.
The relationships are very important to me. That's what this place is built on.
That's your boy. That's your judge of character.
I'm going to end up in a Columbia prison.
That 95 Miami is my fondest memory. And maybe the experience after the Sugar Bowl with Wes Worsham and J.C. Price on Bourbon Street. Come on, J.C.
I want to know what you're drinking, Robbie.
It is roasty goodness, even though I was out.
What's the percent on that?
11.
It was a dream come true back then, and it's a dream come true today.
Hey, Mom, why don't you try a rail?
We're going to put this old guy in a grave.
For the love of the game.
And I mow the lawn after work before the podcast.
We just got better, guys.
Welcome to Too Deep, Hokies Under the Influence, a Sons of Saturday podcast. It is draft night, Sam. It's me, PP. I got my co-host, Sam. Sam, how you feeling? It's NFL draft night.
The Browns don't have a pick tonight. The Browns probably don't need a pick tonight, so I'm feeling great.
You're relaxed, don't have to worry about the stress of, well, you could have a trade up. You never know.
I think they're at the point where they just need players to be healthy. So I feel pretty good right now.
Yeah, we are following live. We'll be watching the draft as we kind of go through this stuff here, but we're going to update you on the football roster movement that happened with the Hokies post spring game. We're going to discuss some of the portal targets the Hokies have. And then Sam and I are going to get into which Virginia Tech players on the current roster will be taken in next year's NFL draft, potentially be taken. We're going to kind of give our opinions on who could go as our top pick, how many guys will go, all that kind of stuff. So we're going to get to that later in the show. And as the picks are happening, particularly when we get to the Commanders pick, which is the one where everyone's kind of waiting to see which guy they go with, and a lot of our listeners are Commanders fans, seems like a good opportunity for us to kind of discuss what's happening in the draft. But first, Sam, we need a cheers from you.
Yeah, so I don't know if we haven't talked about softball too much on the show, but I believe they've won 11 straight games and are outscoring opponents by, I want to get this number right because it's pretty ridiculous.
I think the last time we talked about it, it was like 60-7 because they had mercy ruled a bunch of teams in a row. But then they added like six more wins to that total.
They did. So they are, since the Marshall game last night, they've won 11 straight. They won that game by two. So they are outscoring opponents 110-24.
That's crazy. Yes. Softball is absolutely rolling.
They are on a roll.
So let's cheers to that. Is that the cheers?
That's the cheers.
All right.
To the softball.
I like it. Yeah, they're number 15, and it's honestly, they could warrant another five spots higher based on what they've done with those 11 wins in a row. 17-0 at home, which is pretty freaking awesome. They swept Georgia Tech, they beat UVA a couple times, and they just beat Marshall. And so, yeah, softball's looking really good to host something or other. Cheers, Sam. Women's basketball. There's just a couple notes before we get to our football stuff here. We don't have anything on women's basketball tonight, but I did want to let you guys know that Billy has done several interviews with our women's basketball players, and the YouTube numbers on them alone are awesome. Everyone seems to be super interested in the girls coming back. Baker was just on with Billy. We had Wenzel on the week before, and then before that, it was one of our recruits, Maya, right?
Yes, and we have a Matilda Eck coming up here soon, I believe.
Yeah, is that tonight, tomorrow, sometime this week? I believe we're going to be interviewing Matilda Eck on the Sons of Saturday YouTube channel and on the Sons of Saturday podcast feed. So stay tuned for that, all of our women's basketball fans. The men's team had another pickup in the portal, Sam. This is number four out of the portal. Hizier Miller from Temple picks Virginia Tech. So a guy up near me and my Eagles, since it is draft night, is coming down to Virginia Tech. He's actually a South Philly kid and had chosen to stay at Temple last year after people were coming at him in the portal. And it must have been a very difficult decision for him to come to Tech and leave Temple, because he has all the ties to Philly, but for us, it's a major win because he averaged almost 16 points a game last year. Decent rebounding numbers for a 6'1" point guard, 4 assists per game, and he's got a 2-to-1 assist to turnover ratio. What did you think about the addition for us?
I mean, it's a really good one. He's a guy that a lot of schools are looking at in the portal. He played on a pretty bad Temple team, so I think you need to take his numbers with a bit of a grain of salt. He was a really high usage player. He only shot like 36% last year, which is pretty low, even for an outside shooting guard. But he does so many things well. He had a lot of clutch buckets. I think he's a great, well, we'll call him what he is, kind of a replacement for the Sean Padula role. If he can keep those turnovers down, and if he can be a 16, 17 point per game scorer, I think Tech's going to feel really good about that portal addition.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The shooting numbers are the concern. You know, that 36% over his career from the field is low. That is low. But you were right on with the usage. He was taking 15 shots a game last year. It wasn't a good offensive team. He probably felt like he had to do too much at times. And in Mike Young's system with Ivory Curry in there, Ivy Curry, JIC, the other combo guard that we're bringing in, he can score. Mm-hmm. Burnham can score. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like some of the weight will be taken off of him and he can focus more of the other aspects of his game because he also had 1.8 steals per game with Temple last year.
I thought Mike Young's comments were very interesting when he said, you know, hey, even though we had decent offensive numbers last year, he hated how the offenses ran last year. And I think he didn't like it 1 through 5. I don't think it was 1 or 2 players. I don't think it was 1 or 2 position groups. I think he just really didn't like how that team played offense. I would not be surprised to see Virginia Tech look a little bit different next year with how they play because he was not happy about it. And the players he's bringing in, they fit Mike Young's system. And if you're not on YouTube, I'm doing that in quotations. But they're different style players. I think they're going to play a little bit differently next year.
I agree. I think the system will be good for him. And we all kind of like want to give some percentage points to his shooting percentage just by being under Mike Young. But I honestly do think it's better coaching than he's gotten. And I'm not trying to disrespect the Temple staff or anything like that, but they had a new coach last year and it's probably been an up and down ride for Miller. But the kid himself seems to have a good head on his shoulders. He likes to serve his community. He's written a book about
He's a published author.
He has a book about his life, his struggles, gun violence in Philadelphia. And one of his focuses is just giving back to kids and essentially keeping them off the streets. And so that's just really cool to get a guy like that into your program, one that's willing to serve the community. And so I'm pumped to have Miller as part of this team. Plus now, Sam, we can play 5-on-5 with scholarship players. So
hey, that's a major W. I would expect them to land somebody else here pretty soon. I don't know who that will be. Miami had a couple guys enter the portal. UNCW had their best player enter the portal today.
Saw so you sent that out today, yeah.
Yeah, so there are still some big names entering the portal. Nordrat Ormier was one of them for Miami, as well as Poplar. It's two of their better players. So there are still some names entering the portal, not just the names that are already in there. So plenty of fish in the sea, as they say.
That's right. In fact, it's crazy how many guys are still jumping in the portal in both basketball and football. Like, I feel like every day we're getting a starter from a P5 team in football that's entering the portal. Like Michigan State lost one of their defensive tackles. There was a big one today. I can't remember it off the top of my head, but it's wild. And so things are still happening. We are waiting to hear about the guys we might be bringing in the portal post spring. That's something we're going to touch on in a second. We've got the draft on here. They're going over what the Bears got in the trade last year.
On the clock.
Yeah, they are on the clock and they're showing the graphic of what they got in the Bryce Young trade. And Panthers fans, I know we got a lot of Panther fans listening. That's got to make you just a little sick. Not that Bryce is necessarily a bust yet, but on paper, it's not looking so good. Make sure if you're watching on YouTube to hit the like button, hop in the chat, make sure you let us know anything. Hey, if you have an opinion on whether you want Drake May or
Jaden
Daniels. Let us know. You got to let us know, because we're going to have a little conversation about these quarterbacks in a second. We're going to handle baseball at the end of the show. We kind of went over all the other sports, but Sam's going to give us his expert baseball update at the end of the show. He's been putting out some articles on the team on sonsofsaturday.com that you guys can check out. They're excellent if you're trying to keep up with Hokie ball. What do you think about? We were having a discussion, Sam, about Caleb Williams. Now that we've got him spinning the football, looks like he's probably going to be the number one pick. That's been assumed for a while. But we heard this week that clip about he's weird and that he's Prince. What was it? He's Prince in football pads. I can't remember the exact quote.
I never thought about that, but he is a lot like Prince. Prince was like is a no doubt Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, one of the best live guitarists of all time, best Super Bowl halftime performance of all time, I would say. So if he's like Prince, I think he's going to do pretty well. I understand the worries about his personality. He is, for lack of a better word, he's a lot more flamboyant than what we're used to seeing out of a franchise quarterback in the NFL. That being said, he doesn't necessarily have bad character issues. He doesn't have any off the field issues. We've never heard anything bad about him as a teammate or as a student or anything like that. But you know, a little bit unorthodox sometimes. And yeah. I understand that. However, I also understand in about 2.5 years of playing at the highest level of college football, he threw for over 10,000 yards, had 94 touchdowns, only 11 interceptions. And he also ran for 1,000 yards for 27 rushing touchdowns. He's the best quarterback prospect since Andrew Luck, I would say. And maybe like in terms of tools plus production.
That's high praise, man. Because Andrew Luck, for people who weren't aware, like Andrew Luck was seen as a generational talent coming out of Stanford, and he obviously ended his career early voluntarily, but, or maybe not so voluntarily, because he was, you know, worried about concussions and whatever else, but we haven't seen too many guys like him come along. And Caleb has been talked about as a prospect like that because of what he can do. We saw him win the Heisman last year, the arm strength, the crazy highlights they're showing right now. I keep turning my head because I got my TV on right here.
2 years. Like, we've known for 2 years he's going to be the number one pick. I don't remember a guy since Andrew Luck that's been like that.
Yeah, that's true. But I think we were going back and forth with this, me, you, Billy Ray, some other people, just what is it about Caleb? What's the knock? Like, what is it, just that he's weird? He paints his nails. He was crying in the stands, all that kind of stuff. To me, like, and there was also that weird press conference where he was kind of standing there. There's just, as college football fans, we've seen a lot, right? Like, of questionable things, what most would think as questionable. If you're just a regular college football fan, you don't see guys like Caleb Williams and the way he acts and the way he performs, that combination very often. I kind of said, like, is he going to be like the Dennis Rodman of the NFL? You know, like Dennis Rodman, another guy that painted his nails and dyed his hair and all kinds of other kind of stuff. But people, you know, insinuate a lot of things about Caleb Williams, but you can't deny the talent. And if it was me at number one, you have to take Caleb because the upside, even if he's got character issues or he's a jerk or he's weird, like the upside is just too great to ignore.
Yeah, there is no amount of non-criminal activity that I think could make me not draft him number one. I just don't see it. And I will say also, he's one of the first athletes in college sports. And I put this in the chat. It's basically, he was a year before Caitlin Clark as the first NIL athlete, national athlete on the Dr. Pepper commercials and stuff like that. And I think we're going to have to get used to that. There are going to be more guys that are in the spotlight for longer in their college career. And he was kind of the first one. Is he a bit emotional? I think so. I think that's pretty clear. He wears his emotions on his sleeve. I also, though, think he's a guy who really, really wanted to win and was pretty upset that he wasn't winning at USC, because it wasn't because of his performance. It was because the whole defensive half of the ball was atrocious. I mean, he lost three games in college when they scored over 45 points.
Yeah, that's
a that's thing. Ridiculous.
They were not losing games because of him, so to speak. Yeah. I mean, it's a team game and we know that, but I think we all know what we're getting at here. His talent is undeniable, and whether he's weird grow. Or not weird or whatever, like he can.
He's a college kid in LA. Of course, he's going to be a little weird.
Yeah, and you know, it's cool if he throws a little flair into the NFL. Like that'll be fun, right?
It'll be
like,
fun.
That'll
for be me.
A fun thing to follow. Also, Dennis Rodman played in Chicago for quite some time.
Yeah, and a decent basketball player.
That's right. This is from Les Hodges. Take Daniels and those skills. What about the scales for Jalen Daniels? I cannot get this right with the Jalen and the Jaden, but
Jalen or
his weight was a talking point, right? Because he is very skinny. He's essentially a twig, and like I think Bill Simmons was joking about, like, is he just downing cheeseburgers before he gets on the scale at the combine, right?
When he gets hit so hard. It's kind of funny. He does have a little bit of, like, for Hokie fans, when Michael Brewer would get hit, he has a little bit of that. We just saw Caleb Williams officially now picked first overall. Mm-hmm. Awesome for him. Like, he's going to be so much fun to watch next year.
He's kind of got awesome. Like a Prince suit on right now. He's got like, maybe he did that on purpose because of the commentary. He's got like the crosses and everything.
Yeah. He's got the kind of, it's not the double button, but it like,
it's a double breasted, but it's an asymmetric zipper.
Yeah. I mean, he's fashion forward. Yeah, I mean, our very own Tyrod Taylor would probably love that suit.
Well, he was just pictured in a tunic on the cover of something.
GQ.
Yeah.
I don't think you choose your own outfit when you're on the cover of GQ.
Maybe not. But I mean, you have to get some kind of approval on that to approve the picture. But anyway, so Washington is going to be up as long as they don't trade out of the pick. And I think this week it was as going in this direction. And we're not going to do draft coverage the whole time. I just kind of wanted to talk about this because we have Commanders fans watching and because, you know, the top three picks and these quarterbacks are big talking points. But Daniels is the way it was being talked about this week. Like sources were saying it's going to be Daniels for Washington. And I think some Washington fans didn't really care for that. They would have rather take Drake May.
I think it's a really tough situation because if you look at what Jaden Daniels and that LSU offense did last year, they're up there with the 2019 LSU offense in terms of how dominant they were, how much better they were than everybody else. So when you watch that and then you watch the UNC film and they were a slightly above 500 team and they were, you know, offensive line couldn't block anybody. They didn't have a ton of explosive plays. Like, I think it'd be hard to pick Drake May here after what we saw last year. Now, on the other side of that, Drake May has a ton of physical tools. Like, he is a Josh Allen prototype player. And he did it for 3 years. Jaden Daniels did it for one. We saw with Kenny Pickett, you know, they had a few bad years, and then he had one really good year, but that hasn't worked out for the Steelers. So Drake May has been the same guy for a while.
Yeah, and one of the knocks on Jaden Daniels is that he's older, right? Like, he's already 23, but the other side of that argument is he just got good at this new program and that he still may have room to improve because maybe developmentally he can get bigger and stronger and that kind of thing. And so the age thing is kind of canceled out by some of the growth prospects on that side of it. For Drake May, and why I like Drake May, and not necessarily over Daniels, but I'll just make a case for him. He lost his offensive coordinator before the season, and you know, they changed OCs at UNC. Mm-hmm. He didn't have the offensive line that LSU had.
Nope.
He didn't have the receivers that LSU had. It was a way better surrounding cast overall. And I just think that has to factor into your decision-making on Drake May, because in year one as a starter, he was sensational. like mm-hmm. at a program that had talent for sure. UNC, we always kind of remark how they didn't do enough with their talent, particularly on defense. But he was great in year one. And in year two, when Josh Downs gets drafted and is no longer there, Longo's no longer there, maybe he didn't play quite as well. And so I think if you put Drake May with LSU's receivers, that could have been crazy too.
I mean, he was this close to going to Alabama in the transfer portal.
Right.
Ended up staying at UNC. So what could have been there? Yeah, I don't know what they're going to do. They got about three on my YouTube TV stream. They have about 3.5 minutes left on the clock. It looks like they're on the phone now.
I've got the
I think they go Jaden Daniels. I think they do.
I think they're probably going to go Daniels too. Yeah. Which I like from an excitement standpoint. I think mm-hmm. he's going to bring DC more excitement. Like, I think the fans will yeah. be once they, because this always happens, even if it's not the guy you wanted, so to speak, as soon as you draft the guy and it's that close, they're all going to get excited because yeah. they're going to go to YouTube. They're going to watch his highlights. They're going to realize that he had 50 touchdowns and they're going to be pumped about it.
It's also, I think it's the weirdest thing that we do. So much of the knock on Jaden Daniels has been like his receivers were wide open. Like, that's not his fault. He's just yeah. throwing to the open guy. So, this might be one of the quarterback classes that we talk about in like 10 years of like who won the quarterback class.
We better hope it's
a legendary class.
I hope it's better than the Kenny Pickett class with like Matt Corral and like that. Oh, that class was awful. So this one does have a lot of potential because we haven't even mentioned Penix and what he could do as a late first rounder or early second rounder or wherever he may go. And J.J. McCarthy could sneak up into the top 10. We don't
Bo
know.
Nix.
Bo Nix.
Bo
exactly.
Nix is hanging around there.
So we are going to get to – let's take a break from the draft. Well, we'll see who the pick is in for Washington. So we'll go back to that in a second. But I did pull the mock draft up from Brendan Donahue. And this is from Warren Sharp's company, Sharp Football Analysis. And this guy, Brendan Donahue, his draft that I have up, has been one of the most accurate in terms of the mock drafts over the past couple of years. And I know like these things are kind of like an exercise in futility. Nevertheless, he has Jaden Daniels going number 2, Drake May going number 3, and J.J. McCarthy going number 5 to the Vikings, which would be a trade up because there's been a lot of conversation about the Vikings wanting to move up. The pick is in for Washington, and we're just waiting here. I'm going to put up another graphic on the screen, Sam. Actually, I'm going to hold off on that. Let's get to the portal entries that Virginia Tech had after the spring game while we're waiting here. 5 guys have hopped into the portal. Gabriel Arena, quarterback Dylan Whitke, safety Antonio Cotman, running back Traylon Mitchell, and linebacker Tavorian Copeland. Of those 5 that jumped in, are any of them a major concern? Are you like shaking your fist in the air like, oh, Tavorian? Like what is the one?
Yeah.
Is there one that sticks out to you, or are you just like, this is what you expected?
No, I mean, none of them surprised me. Dylan Whitke, whoever lost that backup was going to go into the portal.
Yeah.
And I think Dylan Whitke's talented. He's physically capable. Obviously he landed at Minnesota very quickly, so that shows you that. Antoine Cotman is a guy who, again, physically looks the part, but Tech had issues in the safety room and he really wasn't able to get into the 2 deep. So that probably tells you something.
There was opportunity there, right?
Same with Copeland. Yeah. I mean, they were missing a starting linebacker or a potential starting linebacker the whole time. And, you know, he didn't make it there, but I know we got the draft going on. Jaden Daniels, the new quarterback of the Washington Commanders.
Yeah. I was talking to my Commander buddies earlier and we were having this Drake May Daniels discussion, whatever, will they trade back? And somehow it got brought up like a Randall Cunningham comp to Jaden mm-hmm. Daniels, which I, as an Eagles fan, I love Randall Cunningham. And at first you're like, oh, that's blasphemy. Cunningham was a legend. And he was, but he was also a skinny, like very much running quarterback with like a cannon for an arm. Now I know no one has the arm that Cunningham has, but I do kind of see it in like the body type and the running ability and some of the things like that. So that was interesting at the very least. And I do think he's going to bring that excitement. The excitement that Philly had, I know via my dad and reading old articles and things like that, like Cunningham was Michael Vick before Michael Vick. Like the excitement around him and what he could do to the game was second to none at the time. And so nowadays we have running quarterbacks all over the NFL, and running quarterbacks, I say that in quotes, but guys who can really, Jalen Hurts types, Kyler Murray, Lamar Jackson, and Jaden kind of fits into that new age RPO mold. And yeah, I think it's a good pick for the Commanders. I think, you know, these, the bust rate on first round quarterbacks is like 50% or depending on where you take them in the first round. But if you want to have a franchise quarterback, most likely that guy comes from the top 15 picks in the draft.
They just showed a highlight here of one of his games at Arizona State, in a game in which he threw a touchdown to Brandon Ayuk.
Right.
Playing against Justin Herbert.
Oh my gosh, wow.
So he's been in college football for a while, and I believe I heard on the Cover 3 podcast today, and I don't know how old Daniels is, but I know this is true for Michael Penix. Players who were drafted at 24 years or older, quarterbacks, only one has gotten the second contract option with that team, and that's Joe Burrow.
So, but I thought Daniels was 23, or maybe when he starts the year, he'll be 24.
Maybe when he starts the year.
Yeah.
Because no one else has been able to do it as an older quarterback. So,
He looks super young though. Like, you look at his face. Like,
well, he's still like 24. Really, like, he's not like an old
I guess,
man.
But I don't know. There are 24-year-olds that look 30, and he does not.
I think he's going to be really fun. I think that offensive line isn't going to be good, so they need somebody who has elite mobility. And I think Drake May has good mobility, not elite mobility. So
Major Tutty is going wild.
Major Tutty. The pick is in for the Patriots real quick.
Okay. Oh, wow.
So they did not trade back or anything like that. They are going for it.
So we talked about those five guys going into the portal, and I would agree with you. There's no heavy losses here. And that's what I was afraid of for the Hokies, is that we would endure a shocking loss. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, all of a sudden one of our starting defensive ends or tackles is in the portal. Like, that's what we were trying to avoid, and we avoided it. Now let's go to our, this is the graphic I was going to add, the roster breakdown. And you'll see I've updated the roster here with everything that happened post spring, and I added the true freshman per my count, which could be off because I don't know if Coach Pry has, you know, added an extra guy to scholarship yet or not, or they're waiting to see what comes in the portal. But I have us at 82 scholarships, and that gives us three opportunities to add either now or over the summer. And there's a few names that have come up repeatedly, and I like. Colby Crawford just did. He's been tracking it with his, you know, Excel sheets and stuff. So we'll come back to this in 1 second. But here's Colby's sheet of just like the offers that are out there. And some of the names you're familiar with, like Ramon Brown is on here, a running back out of Maryland. Everyone knows how close we were to getting him the first time around. In fact, we did get him. And then we didn't get him.
Just jumped off the hook on that one.
The quarterback, though, on this list, I find intriguing. Colin Schley of UCLA. Last podcast, we discussed the idea of bringing in a veteran quarterback to back up Drones and maybe provide some stability in case Pop isn't ready quite yet. And Schley would be that guy. And I'm not sure how familiar you are with him. He played at UCLA, Sam. I know you know who he is. He has 1 year left of eligibility, and he's either just visited or he's going to be visiting. His skill set suits the offense.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, he was in a weird situation at UCLA. Like, they couldn't figure out the quarterback position last year. They had Dante Moore, the five-star. That didn't work out as well. They had issues on offense all year long. I don't know if I see that being the best option for Virginia Tech, because we'll talk about this a little bit later, but I don't really see a world. If Kyren Drones is the player who we all think he is, I don't see a world where he doesn't go in the draft next year. So you're going to have a quarterback vacancy. And I don't know if you want to just start completely fresh. I think if you're going to bring somebody in, you want at least 2 years of eligibility left.
Drake May goes to the Patriots.
Poor guy.
But back to your thoughts.
And I can't believe I'm saying that, but
I mean,
tough spot.
Because Belichick's no longer there. So it's not just Belichick plug and play with like his new franchise quarterback. But I do like Drake May's potential. I think he could be good, but one of these guys is probably going to, you know, flame out. Like that's how these numbers tend to work. So I don't know which of the three it's going to be, but one of them probably is one at least. But back to the drones thought you just put out there. I want to talk about where they could potentially go in the draft, but you feel like are you convinced that like this is Drones' last year at Tech?
Yeah, I am. And there's a few reasons for that. One, because if he has the year that we expect him, if he continues his trajectory from last year, he's a draftable quarterback. And next year's quarterback class is not very deep because they're all in this draft. So I think he would come in, be a draftable quarterback. You don't want to risk another year of injury. You're not going to make more in NIL than you are going to be a drafted quarterback if you're drafted in the top 3-4 rounds. So I think if all works to plan, he's gone. And we're all very happy about it.
Well, yes, that's what we would want.
I don't see a world where he comes back to Virginia Tech after next year. I just don't see that scenario.
And that's
the only
fine.
Way I see that is like, and I'm knock on wood, but an early season injury,
like an Allie Jennings type situation, right?
Yeah, that's the only way I see it happening.
I would say yes. That's what I hope. That's what I kind of expect. But with regard to Colin Schley, like, wouldn't you still want to bring him in as a backup if you could?
Yeah, I just don't know if Schley is going to come in. And then I also think, what do you do the year after that? Because
you have Pop, you have Davi, you have
How good do you feel about Pop if you're bringing in another guy to be the backup?
Well, I think year. Part of it is that you make sure. First of all, we only have like one backup quarterback that's played at any time at Virginia Tech right now. So it's more of like it's a security blanket, if nothing else, if the worst happens. I think that's why you bring him in. I think for Schley, it's like I'm one play away from getting snaps on a very good roster, you know?
True.
And so I don't know, but I would love it if he would take the scholarship and come and play for the Hokies, because I think he's the perfect fit for what we do offensively. He can run. Like, he's not the best passer in the world by any means, but with the wide receivers we have, with the running backs we have, and the way he can run the football similar to Kyren, I think that would be a good addition. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just looking on 247 real quick. The top quarterback who is not committed yet is Timmy McClain from Central Florida. Colin Schley, fourth. Guess who's fifth?
Dylan Whitke? I don't know.
Demetrius Davis.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Yeah, well, let's not go back down that road, right? I think we need to bring in a quarterback at this point. If it's not Schley, we probably got to go get another body, because I don't think Pop and Davi are enough for next year. Like, I just don't. I said last week, they
need to bring somebody in. Yeah.
Yes. I think Pop can get us wins. And I can be talked into and be fine with the idea that Pop has to take over if Drones, God forbid, had to leave a game. But I would like a security blanket of a guy who's played a couple of years of college football as well. As far as Ramon Brown goes, if we have a scholarship available and it's the beginning of summer, yeah, bring him in. He's got 3 years of eligibility left. We're going to lose two running backs next year. He's a talented kid. He was played under Brooks before. So all the signs are there. If he can get his grades in order, he's probably going to be a Hokie. That's kind of what I've been assuming this whole time.
You never want to assume in the transfer portal era, though. You never want. I mean, this could be. I saw something today where John Rothstein, the College Basketball Reporter, where he tweeted out the three toughest things to do right now are climb Mount Everest, run a marathon, and track the transfer portal.
He's not lying, man. It is wild. I just mean from the standpoint of he's been in the facility a bunch of times. Mm-hmm. He's visited a bunch of times. I think he's at like the local community college trying to get his grades right. So like, I think he wants to be at Tech. Mm-hmm. There was also some rumors that we might be in on another running back at some point, but I'm trying to see if he's on this list. Oh, the Louisville kid, Penny Boone, like we offered him. Mm-hmm. Well, that makes sense. He's a very good player. He's the one that came to Louisville and now is bouncing out of Louisville in just a couple months, like some of those other kids. But Penny Boone was a guy they were counting on. Like Brom, like that was a key piece of his offense. And now Louisville doesn't have him.
Louisville's weird stuff's going on at Louisville, man. There are questions about whether they are able to come through with some of their NIL promises. Again, they've had two really big transfer portal classes in a row. So some questions going on at Louisville organizationally, I would say.
Number four overall pick is Marvin Harrison Jr. There was some talk about Malik Nabers maybe sneaking up in there, but Marvin Harrison, long talked about as the best wide receiver in this draft by a mile, goes as the top wide receiver after three straight quarterbacks. Chargers are on the clock. So, Sam, you see this list, you see our roster, which I can put back up. What position on the Hokies must one of the three roster spots we have available go to? What position do we need to get? Like, we need to fill, have a body, whatever, at that position.
I think you got to find somebody on the offensive line. I don't think, like, they have a lot of young players on the offensive line, but I don't think they're very confident in how playable some of those guys are. And that could be because they're young, right? I mean, we're looking at this list. You have six freshmen on that list, three of them true freshmen. Mm-hmm. But if they can get somebody to bring into that room, I think you have to, at least to compete, at least to give you depth, because half of that list just isn't playable depth right now. So
yeah, like even if it's a Clayton Frady type, someone to just put out there, a veteran for practice. Yeah, a body. Yeah. I mean, go ahead.
Yeah. And then I think the next one is at this point, best available. I know they're after a couple defensive tackles, the one from Georgia Tech, Ayo Tiafasi, something like that.
Yeah, Ayo Tiafasi, yep.
Ayo Tiafasi, they're after him, maybe a couple FCS guys. I think you're just kind of in best available mode at this point in the transfer portal.
I think you're probably right. I would like to add a safety. I think that Caleb Spencer, kid from Miami, I'd like to add him. Mm-hmm. Christopher Adams, the tackle from ODU. I would very much like to add him. You're talking about offensive line. Yeah. Ayo Tiafasi is a defensive tackle. So, you know, I don't know, but we have some defensive tackles, but you can't help but have enough big dudes. You just can't.
I mean, they're going to lose too, regardless next year. They're going to lose Fuga and they're going to lose Peebles.
Yeah.
They're out of eligibility.
You're right. You're right.
And then they're going to lose Panay as well. He'll be out of eligibility. So that's three of your top five.
Tiafasi's got 3 years left. So that would be a nice addition.
That's what Tech needs to target, not the one and done guys. And I know you get who you can, but for a developmental program that's not going to land the 5 or 4-star recruits, you got to be able to find these guys who you can develop for at least a year. You know, I think that's going to be the key for Virginia Tech going forward in the transfer portal. The 1 year thing is not sustainable. We see that. We see it in basketball and we see it with other teams. It's not sustainable.
Now, here's my qualification for that though, Sam. If we're in this second portal window here, and if you've got three scholarships left, you want to fill them just for the sake of depth. Now, you could give them to a deserving guy who has been kicking butt in spring, right? So one of these scholarships might go to someone like that. But if you are adding a guy just out of desperation, is not the right word, but just to fill the 85, because you should have 85. You don't want to go in with 84. Mm-hmm. Make sure it's a 1 year guy. If it's not someone you're super in love with, if it is someone you really like for the future, 2-3 years would be optimal. But we're only talking about, you know, one or two spots to play with. I mean, there's three technically, but I think ultimately, you know, they're going to disappear quickly. And so whether it's Ramon Brown or a tackle or a safety, I think I could get down with your best available idea, but I could go for another linebacker.
I think you could too. Again, there's some guys on that list who I don't know if you would consider them playable depth right now.
Mm-hmm.
Some for some reason, some for other reasons. And so if you can find a guy like Alderman from Louisville, bring him in, because maybe he's not a superstar. Maybe he doesn't start for you, but at worst, he's a depth piece. At worst, he's somebody who's played high level football.
Yeah. And he went to a good high school, that's for sure. All right. Yeah. So let's take a quick break to talk about our sponsor and talk about some beer. Two Deep Hokies Under the Influence is brought to you by Roback. Roback is the performance activewear designed for those who crave activity. It's the polo company that brought you the Commonwealth. Sam was showing it to you last week on the pod, the white one with the tiny maroon Virginias. They also have the Berg, which is the two-tone quarter zip. Both are gorgeous. Right now, they're offering our listeners 20% off their first order using code 2DBT. We talk about it all the time, but I know some of you out there probably haven't taken advantage yet. They got the hoodies, they got the tees, the awesome quarter zip, shorts, joggers, and of course, their polos. And it's not just that Virginia Tech polo. They've got so many cool designs. They've got different city designs. They've got different, like, you know, there's hot dog ones, there's golf cart ones, there's all kinds of different ones, and it's golf season. And so you need to re-up your wardrobe. Head to Roback, load up your cart, and use code 2DBT for 20% off your order. Roback, crave activity. Right now, Sam, I need to know what you're drinking.
I am back in the beer review game, and I'm back with a strong one. From our good friends in Charlottesville, Virginia at Three Notched, this is the Berry Goatzerilla.
Oh, I noticed it was colorful.
Look at that can.
Is that a 20-ounce can?
That is a big boy can, which is cool about this one, too. So it is, I'll go over some of the stats for the nerds. 9.5 ABV on this one. It is a Goatza. So if you don't know what a Goatza is, it is a fruity, tart, sour beer. Usually come in like a bright red color like this one here. This one is like a raspberry blueberry flavor Goatza. Incredible. Like, this is really good. It does not taste like 9.5%. It tastes like 6.5%. It's fruity. It's always a good light.
What's the sour scale though? Is it very sour or just like a slight tartness to it?
More than slight. Okay. The way a Goatza is brewed is you can't really get slight. It's pretty intense no matter what kind you get. So it has that intense tart flavor. It's not going to make you pucker like a Sour Patch Kid or anything like that, but it's bright. We'll put it
one
that
of these
way.
Days. I'm glad. Well, give me the brewery and the name of the beer one more time.
Three Notched.
Okay.
And the Berry Goatzerilla. Got this gorilla on the front.
I like it. That's a very cool can. I need to get someone on this podcast that can explain to me the difference between, you know, a goes and a goza, and because there is technically a difference, like from what I understand. And I
there's
think
a professor at Tech that we should definitely have on.
Yes, there is.
Yeah,
there is. I also ran into, well, maybe that's who I ran into. But either way, yes, that's a great idea. I am drinking the Right Proper Brewing. This is right out of DC. Raised by Wolves. If you have ever been to Right Proper, this was one of their original beers that they've brewed. It's a dry hopped pale ale, and it's one of the ones that I was always a go-to. For one, I really like this can. I've never actually had it in a can, and I haven't lived in DC in quite some time, but when I did live down on Florida Avenue, I was very close to this. So I would go pretty often, and this was one of my go-tos. They had a bunch of beers that I liked. This has kind of like it's a pale, but it kind of tastes like that West Coast IPA bitterness. It's got, and my friend actually gave these to me. He's like, I really don't like these. You can take them. And I was like, oh, I've had that beer. I'll take them with me. And like, I had it again. And I think the reason he doesn't like them is because we've all become accustomed to these hazies and the juicy IPAs and the tropical flavors. And when you go back to a normal kind of bitter pale and you're not ready for it or not used to it anymore, you're like, I don't really like that. This beer is good. Like, I actually do really enjoy this beer. I had one the other night. I'm having another one now. And it's a great, like, pizza beer, a burger beer. Not quite like a Pilsner, obviously. But it's got that bite back that's good after some food.
Yeah, I think it is tough when you go from the craft beer scene that we have in America now, where almost everything has a fruit element to it, mm-hmm. going from there to just a standard German style beer, it's a bit of a jump in your flavor palette. So
no doubt about it. No doubt about it. All right. That's going to do it for the beer break for now. We still got the draft going. Number five just got picked by the Chargers. Sam, did you see who that was?
Nope.
I missed it.
Anybody
see? You got somebody. Thomas Train in the chat. Offensive tackle and running back with multiple years remaining. Would have been nice to have had Davy here this spring. Mm-hmm. More for next year than this one. Yeah, that's all true. Like, we had Pop in last spring, and I feel like Pop wouldn't be where he is now if he wasn't here last spring. And Davy will come in here. Unfortunately for him, we've got a starter at quarterback. We've got a potential other starter in front of him in Bob Watson. So he will have time to develop, barring something crazy. Plus the fact that both Sam and I wouldn't mind bringing in another quarterback.
Chargers drafted Joe Alt, tackle from Notre Dame.
Ah,
great nice. Pick.
Very, very great good pick. Player. Yeah.
Good
hit rate on those tackles in the first round.
Amazing hit rate. I mean, he's going to be a guy who you put him at left tackle and you say, all right, we'll see you in 15 years when you retire.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah. Notre Dame has been doing that for 7 years now. Like they've been
offensive line
grooming offensive linemen up there. Mm-hmm. Big boy. They're showing him on the screen now. Minnesota kid. All right. Draftable players in 2025, Sam. Of all of our guys that will be eligible next year, and it is many, which is a dichotomy from this year, which it's really Faldarius Payne, Pollard, Kendricks, Peoples, and Tisdale, and maybe some at Colbeck, some of the specialists, right? Like,
yeah.
Long snapper,
Tisdale's maybe. In the portal, I believe. Is he?
No, I think he was on the draft.
Is he on the draft
graphic
thing?
That okay. Tech put out? So he's draft eligible. Hopefully he gets some kind of deal, whether it's a late round pick or an undrafted free agent. But right now, the only projected draftee potentially is Payne because of how, which is crazy because he wasn't even a starter for us, but he played really well when he got a chance, and particularly towards the end of the year, he was kicking butt, as we know. In fact, Payne was just on with the Boundary Corner guys earlier this week or late last week, and you should check that out. But as for next year, it's going to be a completely different story. We're going to have so many guys, so many of the stars that we got to come back for this year, whether it was come back from NFL draft or just come back from the portal or not leaving. Let me go over some of the names. Mansoor Delane, Dorian Strong, Ali Jennings, Felton, APR, Tootin, Drones, Jalen Lane, Stroman, and then some of our new guys, Copeland and Peebles. I'm going to throw them in there. Burgos, Kelly Lawson, and Caden Moore.
Nick Gallo.
There's yeah. and there's more and more that, like, I'm like, I don't think Nick Gallo will be drafted, but I don't know. Maybe, like, probably not.
Locking tight end. Maybe.
So my question to you, Sam, you look at all these guys we have draft eligible for next year. Which guy or guys are likely to be the tops off the board? Like, which would be their first player drafted in 2025?
I'm not going to consider Kyren Jurens here because I think that is so, so dependent on how he plays.
We can have a conversation about that after this.
I think Ali Jennings, the way that he has produced when he is healthy and his body style and his catch radius and like all those things, man, he's really good. And I think he's a guy who you could see, if I look at the guys who are maybe not first round, but I look at some of the wide receivers being talked about in the second and third round, and this is a really deep wide receiver draft class, but I'm like, man, we saw him in that ODU game and we saw his film from ODU. He's just as good as some of those guys that are second and third round. So I think he's a guy who could really pop off this year. Felton physically, I think, has that capability as well. I don't know if he has the top end speed, but then, you know, I look defensively. I think Dorian Strong could be a first rounder. He's continued to get bigger. His numbers are off the charts. He's going to keep playing well. I think if Caleb Farley can be a first rounder, and that's not a diss on Caleb Farley, but like Dorian Strong is a better cornerback than Caleb Farley was.
And definitely Caleb more Farley experienced.
Definitely more experienced.
Longer success tenure, you know, over his years.
I think he can be a late first round cornerback. So he's my guy for first round potential.
Okay. So if you're handicapping it, and we know you like to do that, best odds to be the first Hokie taken.
I think it is Dorian Strong, because if you look at the PFF numbers and you look at just the raw stats, like teams just don't complete passes against him. I think that has the biggest opportunity to jump off the board to some general manager. Like one of the 32 general managers is going to be like, wait, nobody's completed a pass at this guy. Yeah, we'll take him. Yeah. You know,
I don't think you're wrong, man. I think that Dorian is a safe bet. I do think he would probably be the leader in the odds. I think Mansoor Delane can make a serious push though. And oddly enough, they play the same position, but they're both really good. Delane burst on the scene as a freshman and maybe didn't follow it up as strongly as we'd hoped this year, but he still played well. Mm-hmm. And in spring, they had him as most improved.
Yeah, so, I think his cover skills, there's no question. His issue's been tackling hasn't been great. And he's not the biggest corner, but his tackling just has left some to be desired in situations. If he's improved that part of his game, I think he's right up there with Strong.
Yeah.
But, we're not going to know that until they play Vanderbilt.
I know. And Dorian Strong, let me kind of go back to what you said about him. Like, there's the other thing that he might end up playing a lot of nickel this year. And if he does and shows that versatility, that could make him move up even higher as well. Now, I think an outside corner would get taken first. But if you can cover in the slot, you can cover just about anybody. And so I think Dorian would be the odds on right now. Ollie Jennings, I agree with you. And let me show what I put out earlier today on Twitter, because I think this is pertinent. The 2022 college football leaders in receiving yards per game. Ollie Jennings was third in 2022 in receiving yards per game. And the graphic is kind of hard to see because, you know, it's small. But the list is there. Number one was Rashee Rice, a second round pick. Number two was Tank Dell, a third round pick. Three was Ollie. After that, it was whatever. You can see the list. It was a third rounder, a fourth rounder, a guy who didn't get drafted, a sixth rounder. Then it was Harrison Jr. Then it was Rome Odunze, both who are probably going in the top 10. One of them already did, and the other one probably will. And then 10 didn't get drafted, and then 11 was Josh Downs in the third rounder. And so everyone around Ollie Jennings, everyone but two of 11 guys, went on average in like the third round. And so if Ollie can have a healthy year, because he only played 9 games in this 2022 season, but he was great with a not great quarterback. Mm-hmm. If he can have a healthy year with Jerones, there's no reason he shouldn't be a third round pick or higher.
That's a crazy list too. You have like top receiver on a Super Bowl champion, all rookie team wide receiver in Tank Dell. Jalen Hylett was as good as he could have been asked to be on the Giants last year. Charlie Jones got drafted to the Bengals. Marvin Harrison Jr. just got drafted. Rome Odunze is going to be drafted tonight. Josh Downs was decent.
I was pretty proud of myself when I like started going through that list. I was like, I gotta get a tweet out on this because this is incredible. But yeah, for Ollie, the biggest thing is health. It's health.
Yeah. Well, what I will say is I think there's a difference between like freak, somebody rolls up on you and breaks your leg, and hamstring issues.
Very true.
I think that's a difference. And for him, he had the ACL issue, which is worrisome. But nope, thumbs down. Thumbs down, StreamYard. It's not a thumbs up emoji. And then he had a freak leg break when a guy rolls up behind him in a rainy game.
Yeah.
So health.
It's not like a, you're right, freak things rather than wear and tear type things that you're worried about.
But I will say, sometimes there are those people in life, both in sports and in life, that sometimes with them, it's always something. And we hope Ollie Jennings can stay on the field, because if he can, he's a special, special talent.
Yeah, I hope it's less Joel Embiid than because he's just, he's a walking injury report. Unfortunately, my Sixers are playing right now as well. Lots of stuff going on tonight. But back to who we think will be drafted. So we agree that Dorian and Delane will be drafted. We think, like, and here's how I'll put it. These are the guys who I think will be drafted. Absolutely, no doubt in my mind, these guys will be drafted in 2025, barring them coming back to school for a bag of money. Delane Strong, Jennings, Felton, I absolutely think will be drafted and could be the top player drafted. I think he's got that potential. APR, and again, could be the top player drafted because defensive ends and edge rushers are always sought after if he has a great year again. And Bashaul Tutin, I think without a doubt, will be drafted. If you look at the numbers, 18 running backs got taken last year. If you don't think Bashaul Tutin is one of the top 18 running backs, you're freaking crazy. Now, if you look at like the, and a lot of the stuff is just based on cumulative numbers because no one has put together a really good mock draft for 2025 yet. Mm-hmm. But Bashaul is like not present on all the ones I tried to find today. But like, I don't think that's the best way to look at it. Let me give you a comparison because this is something I was working on today. Jahmyr Gibbs. Would you call Jahmyr Gibbs a similar player to Bashaul Tutin in terms of his ability to catch and his ability to play in special teams?
I think so. I think Gibbs has a little bit more of that explosion style running, whereas I think Bashaul Tutin just hits a top speed. But yeah, I think skill set wise, he fits that modern NFL running back mode.
Yeah, and if you look at Gibbs' numbers his last year at Georgia Tech, because that was his second to last year in college. He had 746 rush, 470 receiving, 6 total touchdowns. So 1,200 yards from scrimmage, 6 touchdowns from scrimmage. Tutin, 1,100 yards from scrimmage, 12 touchdowns. The numbers are extremely similar, and I can't imagine Bashaul's offensive line was, or I should say, Gibbs's offensive line was as bad as ours was at the beginning of last year. I think with a better offensive line, which it looks like we may have going into next year, if only slightly, and based on the growth we saw over the year, that Bashaul could put up incredible numbers. He can catch out of the backfield. He can return. He returned an extra kick for a touchdown that Gibbs did not do as well. So like, I'm not saying he's Jahmyr Gibbs. I'm just saying they're similar players. They're the similar height and weight. Gibbs went 12 overall. Now, I thought that was way too early, but it's
maybe just it wasn't.
Maybe it wasn't because the Lions were good. And I think that Bashaul, Omarion Hampton, Ollie Gordon, Trevion Henderson, I think he can compete with all of those guys.
I would say so. And I would also say, you know, there's this idea around football analytics, Twitter, and that sphere where running back has been so devalued in the past decade. We kind of see it as a very expendable position. And we see it as a position where you shouldn't pay a lot of money and you shouldn't use a lot of draft capital on it. And while that has a lot of merits, and that's true in a lot of spaces, NFL coaches and GMs have proven to us in the last few years that they don't necessarily see it to that extent because they're willing to go out and see a talent like Jahmyr Gibbs and see how it fits in their offense. And they're willing to take him 12. And it worked for the Lions. I mean, they almost made the Super Bowl because of a player like Jahmyr Gibbs. I mean, look at what the Browns are doing with Nick Chubb. I mean, they're just keep bringing him back.
That's a good point, Sam. And I don't mean to cut you off. I'm just watching TV. I'm listening and I'm talking, but I do think the running back is having a slight resurgence. Do you kind of like feel that in terms of like value? Like, I think the best ones have always been valued and will always get their chunk of change. But I also think like it's kind of starting to skew the other way just a little bit. And we saw it with 2 first round running backs last year, Bijan and then Gibbs going early in the draft. Again, I think at the time I thought it was a mistake. I thought it was silly. I thought you might have been able to get Gibbs later, all the rest of it. Nevertheless, he went 12th overall. And if we see a guy like Bashaul who has the skills, the breaking tackling ability, the the speed. And that's one of the biggest things that they look at with these running backs. He returns kicks, for Christ's sake. Like, he's got speed. So I'm making my case that he will absolutely be drafted, you know, barring something catastrophic. But could he be a top, like, three-round pick? I think Tootin could be.
He could. And I'll say our running backs having a resurgence. I think the NFL will always value the star running back. It is such a game changer. Like, the top 20 or so running backs in the league are indispensable players. You know, your Christian McCaffrey, Nick Chubb, like we talked about, guys like that are, I mean, indispensable.
They're critical to your offense in the way it
runs. Now, on the flip side of that, you have teams like what the Eagles did and what the Chiefs have kind of done, where, okay, you have some good running backs, but it's more running back by committee a little bit, and they, you know, you use them in different ways, and you're not going to really pay a ton for them. Like, I don't see the Chiefs paying out the bag for Isaiah Pacheco. After the Eagles Super Bowl, they weren't signing all those running backs and stuff like that, right? So there's kind of two schools of thought, and I'm excited to see Bashaul Tootin. I don't think he'll get as big of a workload this year. I think you'll see Malachi Thomas get a little bit more workload. Remember, Thomas was injured and playing injured in a lot of those games. And then I don't think they'll run him as much. I don't think they'll throw to him as much this year, just because they have other weapons other places. So his stats might not be as good this year, but I think the film, 2 years of film at a Power 5 level, I think are going to wake up some NFL GMs for sure.
And that's the other thing. Last year was his first year on the stage. Gibbs was always on the stage. He just moved to an even better stage going to Alabama. Tootin was in FCS. And so, yeah, the scouts had never heard of him. And now they did. And now we'll get another year. But the thing about Malachi Thomas, and, oh, he was injured last year. He's injured every year. He's always injured. And so
there's a good – some guys, it's always something. It's not their fault, but some players – always are carrying that.
And I'm just stating a fact. Malachi has had injury issues every year he's been at Tech. I like Malachi. I think when healthy, he's a great running back. But I think Tootin's going to have a big workload. I think we're going to use him a lot. And so I think he could put up similar numbers. It's just wild how similar him and Gibbs's numbers were from those seasons. We got my buddy Brian here saying he ran fast into the hill at Lane North twice. And that is very true. It's a hokey takeover.
That was awesome.
But okay, the other guys, breakout candidates for the Hokies that could end up being drafted. And there's a lot of guys on this list, because I don't know if Jalen Stroman is a surefire draft pick right now. But if he has a fully healthy year and plays well, he could absolutely be drafted. Jalen Lane, is he a draftable wide receiver right now? I think he is. Especially because he can return as well. He can return kicks. What are your thoughts on Lane? Do you think he would go in the draft next year?
You know, it's hard for slot wide receiver guys like that, because there are so many of them. And that's not a knock on Jalen Lane. It's just like there are a lot of talented slot wide receivers in modern college football.
There are.
And
a lot of wide receivers, period.
Yeah, and only so many. Like, there's only so many wide receiver roster spots. And it's kind of tough. We've seen really good Virginia Tech wide receivers not really stick in the NFL. Like, you know, Cam Phillips, who's now on staff, was incredible at Virginia Tech.
Didn't and incredible in the XFL.
he was. And it's just a numbers game at wide receiver. And so I think that's hard. I think of a guy who could break out. Stroman, if he's healthy for a whole year, I think could play his way into a late round pick or a picked up free agent. APR, and I think we had a comment about Power Island.
Yeah, too. I'll put it back on the screen. And Peebles was the other
and Peebles. Yeah. Peebles, I think, could. But Peebles and APR are both pretty undersized for NFL. And I think that's a big deal. Like, we've seen that with Daddy Nicholas. We've seen that with a couple of, like, going way back, like Corey Moore.
We saw it with Corey Moore. I was thinking,
like, you can be a great college player, but when the guy, like, did you see those Joe Alt highlights? like I don't care how fast you are, that guy's fast too, and he's 50 pounds more than you.
Oh shit, Penix just went number 8.
Whoa. Whoa,
did McCarthy go yet? Did I miss that?
Nope.
Oh wow.
Tennessee picked up the offensive tackle from Alabama. And Billy Ray, that's his guy.
Penix was his guy.
Shout out to Michael Penix, though. Great college career. Seems like an awesome guy.
Yeah. He was threading some dimes in the semis. His national championship game performance was a little uneven, mm-hmm. but all year his throws were just on the money. Now, he also benefited from a tremendous cast of wide receivers, three, in fact, that may go in this first round.
And the award-winning offensive line in yes. college football.
Great. That's the thing, is Penix had every advantage. Of all the quarterbacks in this draft, I think he had more advantages than any of them.
Mm-hmm. But he's a,
but he's good. He's, I mean, he was really good.
I really think he is.
Yeah. He lived up to it. He had the advantages and he took advantage of all of them and he played great. Mm-hmm. So it's cool. He goes to the Falcons at number eight. So
that's going to be fun. That's Peebles,
I agree with your thoughts. Size hurts him, but we've seen undersized guys with a motor
mm-hmm.
do it. Now, the issue for Peebles more than anything else, and the reason he has to have a breakout year, is because he didn't play all the snaps. He was very similar to Feldarius Payne in that respect. We got to see him with a high snap count perform like he did in spurts last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do. And I think APR, the number of sacks you have isn't necessarily equal to your production overall, you know, and I think we're going to have to see another season of APR highlights and kind of mm-hmm. see him be consistent stopping the run. You're going to have to see him be consistently pressuring the quarterback, even if he doesn't get home for a sack. In the NFL, you're going to have to be able to see him play different positions. You know, if you look how they're using defensive ends now in the NFL, some guys are using them as like outside linebackers almost. Some of them, they want to bring them back into like the D tackle position at some points. Like, you have to be flexible as a defensive end in the NFL now. They don't even call it defensive end anymore. They just call it edge.
Yeah, a lot of times they do, because it'll be a stand-up linebacker or whatever else. Yeah, if you can get to the quarterback, like, that's what it's about. And so, mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, there's talent there. There's athleticism there.
So do you think Kamari Copeland has more draft potential than Peebles?
I have no idea. I have no idea. We haven't seen him play. Like, I think with Peebles, we kind of know what we're going to get. Kamari Copeland is a wild card.
It is.
In all the best ways. In all the best ways. Like,
he looked solid in the spring game, breaking up that pass.
Or was the one that, it was him. It was Copeland broke it up. Burgos got the interception.
Was it the other way around? It doesn't matter.
Burgos got the interception. I think he's the one that physically could handle looks like he could handle the NFL.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he matches the prototype for those guys. And I think, again, on the Cover 3 podcast today, they did their draft rundown, and they all mentioned it, that defensive tackle is one of the position groups where your numbers in college and where you play doesn't really matter. It is about, are you big? Are you fast? All right, cool. We're going to give you a shot, because it's such a rare athlete. Like, there aren't a lot of those guys.
Yeah.
And so if he shows that he can, you know, play a lot of snaps, he can run down guys, he can push guys around, like, that's all NFL scouts are going to need. Like, they don't need him to get seven sacks as a defensive tackle or anything.
Before we discuss Kyren Drones, I want to throw this one at you, and it's Kelly Lawson. And the reason I'm bringing it up is because he made the freaks list last year before the season, Bruce Feldman's famous article that he does every year. And when I was looking for 2025 mocks or rankings or whatever, the one place I found one that ranked pretty much everybody, I can't even remember the source, it doesn't matter, Lawson was the 10th linebacker listed. Now, it's just some guy making a list. It was a website. I think it was called like B&B Football or whatever. It reminded me that Kelly has all the physical tools, like crazy, crazy physical tools that can be hard to ignore for NFL teams. But he must play significantly better, because I think Chris Coleman was talking about it on TSL after the spring game. Like, he has some of the worst like PFF grades of any linebacker in the country last year. Did Kelly Lawson?
Yeah, it's tough because I mean, that whole room, man, is the physicality is so there. And I think for a couple years there with Virginia Tech, it was, we had players who had all the mental ability, but they didn't have the physical ability. And now it seems like we have the players who have the physical ability, but they're never in the right place. Mm-hmm. And like, they are sometimes, and I mean this seriously, they are sometimes actively running away from the football. They are the opposite of the Dax Holifield heat-seeking missile.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I want to say, I don't really know what to say about Kelly Lawson, because
I know
if he's in position, he can make all the plays, and he is a freak. Like, he's not the thickness that Tremaine Edmonds is, but a guy that size can be so imposing. He's just never in the right place to make the play. And so if he's in position this year, like, I think he could be a breakout player, but he wasn't able to participate this spring.
I know. And that's a bummer.
That's a killer. They seem to be trying out a lot of different guys at linebacker. I think linebacker across the board is an open competition, except for Sam Brumfield at Mike. I think for better or worse, they have to stick with
him. I don't think they have any idea who they're playing. Like, I mean, I guess Keonta is going to be the star.
Keonta is, and I think he's a guy who is similar to Jalen Stroman, where he could play his way into a late round draft pick. He grades out very well. We'll see. But this linebacker room has a lot of money. I miss Dax, Brian says. Yeah, I mean, Dax, the one thing you could say about Dax was he was going to be in the right spot.
In his last year.
Never,
because this is funny, because me and Brian go back a long way, and like, both of us had, you know, we were all not always on board with Dax, because he had that problem at times in his career of going backwards, not being in the right spot. But in his final year under Coach Pry and Coach Marv, Dax was excellent. He was a really good player.
I believe Justin Fuente called him an unguided missile.
Yeah. Who turned into a heat-seeking missile, as you said, yeah, later in his career. But so the last one I wanted to mention was Caden Moore. Now, is Caden Moore someone that if he shows out this year, because he was a very good guard, and center, it's hard to find good centers. There's only nine taken. There was only nine taken in last year's draft. It's probably around, you know, nine to a dozen any given year. And there's only 15 guards taken. Mm-hmm. But if we were going through our line and trying to pick the best offensive lineman, I think it would be Caden. And he plays a position that he was new at last year. If he could take a step, there's a chance he could work his way into a draft pick, maybe.
And I think versatility is so important on the interior offensive line too. I mean, guys move around all the time between those two guard spots and maybe even center for some players. So If he shows that versatility, I think that's a plus. I pointed it out in the spring game when they had that screen to Malachi Thomas. For about 45 yards, he ran step for step with Malachi Thomas. Started to fall back there a little at the end, but he has so many good raw tools. And I think if he has a good year, he's going to be a guy that scouts are going to look at.
And I think
he could have a really good year.
I don't think I mentioned Burgos yet. We didn't talk about Burgos as a draft candidate. Because if he breaks out, he's eligible, and he's 6'5", he's 250. Like,
well, I mean, if that spring game is any indication, he's the next J.J. Watt. So,
but you know what I'm saying? Like, he is a breakout candidate on our team without a doubt. And I think his measurables, if he does break out, will throw him into the draft conversation.
He is. And he'd have the opportunity to come back.
I think so, but he's older than you think.
Yeah, he's, because I believe this is a true junior year, right? I think so.
I got the roster here. Hold on.
I think he's a junior this year. And so I do think he is the type of player that
Burgos is a true junior.
Yeah, so I think he's going to benefit a lot from APR drawing a lot of attention on the other side of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's going to be key for him, is winning like one-on-one matchups, because I do think you will see APR double teamed a lot this year.
You
don't get 9.5 sacks and then not get double teamed. So I think he's going to have a lot of opportunities.
Yeah, I think he will too. And with the defensive tackle strength we have, like, it's going to work well for all those guys. Like, getting pressure on the quarterback, putting up numbers, getting TFL, like, they could all have really good seasons. So basically I'm saying, like, we have, I don't know, 13 draftable players.
we have, I would say we have, at the end of the season, we're going to have between 10 and 15 players that you can put on a graphic.
Yeah. Yeah. Whether or not, because right now we have like 8 guys on a graphic. No. We will not, because I think Georgia set the record with 15 like 2 years ago. So yeah,
I think
we could have, like I said, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I think we'll have six. We'll have six without a doubt. I would think we'll have six guys drafted without a doubt.
I think that's probably right.
But we didn't have the Kyron Jones conversation, so let's have it before we talk about baseball.
Man,
there's some good quarterbacks. You talked about it being a weak quarterback class compared to this year. I totally agree with you. Carson Beck's eligible next year, right?
Yep.
Quinn Ewers. There's a handful of other ones. Drones has been getting that hype, being talked about as one of the best returning quarterbacks. For him to go in the draft, anywhere in the draft, but if you're going to be a quarterback and he's going to leave, he's got to be a top three round pick. For him to do that, he has to show an ability to make all the throws, go through his progressions. And because he has the size, he has the running ability. So it's really about, can he make all those throws? Can he hit a deep ball? Because that's one thing we didn't see him. Did it a couple times. We need to see him do it with more regularity.
You don't really see him miss a lot of throws, but then you look at his completion percentage and you're like, man, that's like low 60s. I kind of thought that was more of a 67, 68% type game. I think he throws the ball away a lot more than people think. A lot of those like deep ball misses were, all right, I'm about to take a sack. There's nowhere to run. I'm going to throw it 50 yards.
Which you're not going to be mad at, right? Like, that's risk aversion.
You're not going to be mad at that. But if you look at the stats, like, that's going to show up as a missed deep ball.
Yes. Being a stat guy like yourself, like, you look at his QBR, you look at his rating, like, they're not good. Like, they're not at the elite level that other guys are. But we know by watching him, he is a good quarterback.
I mean, shoot, the year before, Jaden Daniels was not good at LSU his last year. He just was not. Joe Burrow at LSU, his junior year, was not very good. Bo Nix got ran out of town at Auburn.
Right.
And he just set the completion percentage record. You know, that stuff happens, and guys make that jump. He can make that jump. I think he will make that jump. Now, I don't think he is going to be people aren't going to clamor over him for a first round pick. Like, I don't think he's that style of quarterback. I think he is a little bit more in the second, third round quarterback guy. Like, you take him to sit behind somebody for a year or so like that. He doesn't have
I don't think our system is going to necessarily do him any favors, but I also think that gets taken into account. Like, because so much of where you go in the draft, one, quarterbacks always rise, right? If you were Penix is a decent quarterback. He might go second round. He might go late first. He went number eight. Like, quarterbacks always rise. And so if Drones can show to have the tools, which I believe he does, his arm strength is good. His size is good, as I said, and he can run. And so if he can show the last piece of the puzzle, which is passing efficiently, he will go. J.J. McCarthy to the
quarterbacks
Vikings.
In the top 10.
They got their quarterback. The Vikings wanted the quarterback. I think, didn't they have 11th pick and move up one? Is that what they just did?
Yeah, because the Jets are next, and that's a team that might need a quarterback next year.
Well, yeah. So they moved ahead of the Jets. The other thing I noticed on this draft was that Roma Dunze got taken by the Bears. So they got Caleb and they got Dunze, and they also have DJ Moore, right? I mean, that team.
And star running back Khalil Herbert.
Yeah, that's right. So the Bears could be on the rise in the next couple of years. They They two really nice picks in the top 10 for them.
The Bears, how over under 3.5 primetime games for the Chicago Bears? I think it's got to be over.
It's a big market too, so probably over.
They'll get a Thursday and they'll get a they'll get a Thursday and they'll get a Monday. And I think they get at least one Sunday night game versus the Packers.
I don't think so. There's a comment here. I don't think that Drones has to carry us to the playoff to get drafted. I don't think so.
What I will say is there does the winning quarterback. The winning quarterback is getting a lot of traction in these NFL drafts. Like, I think that's why JJ McCarthy is here.
Like, I just think the more you win, the more you're talked about, the more you're on TV. Like, I don't, like, I really think it just creates opportunity. Winning creates opportunity for people to see you and talk about you. Mm-hmm. And so that's why the winning quarterback thing ends up more than anything else. Now, maybe you're right. Maybe it factors into their decision more. I don't think that it should. Like, you can go 8-4 and like, look at Josh Allen at Wyoming. Like, they weren't any good, and he's a pretty darn good NFL quarterback.
Like a 7-5 team all 4 years, all three.
But
years
I do know what you're saying, and I do think it's given credit subconsciously through the exposure you get from winning. But if Kyren Drones gets us to, I think we can, if we win 8 games and he has an amazing year, like, he's going to be a draftable quarterback. Now, if he wins 9 or 10, I think it goes up exponentially in terms of how people will be evaluating him. And so I'm just so excited to see how this all plays out, because no, we're not going to get all these guys drafted. But the fact that we're even talking about the potential for some of these guys, we had one player taken a year ago. We might have one player taken this draft if we're lucky. And so the idea that I think personally that we're going to have 5 or 6 drafted like next year, that's exciting. Like, that is really exciting.
In finance, we call that a hockey stick curve where you're flat, 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 and then whoop, straight up. So yeah. That also means that 2025 is going to be a really difficult year for Brent Pry.
Yes. The returning production will be low in 2025.
15% is generous. Generous. And I said 4 quarterbacks are taken. That misspoken by me. 5 quarterbacks in the top 10. Bud Elliott just tweeted out 5 quarterbacks in the top 10 should tell you all you need to know about what the league thinks about next year's quarterback class.
Ooh, see, that's good for Drones. And you know what else this year is good for? We already said this, but Ollie Jennings, like, not going in this wide receiver draft.
Oh, yeah.
He lucked out. Like, you don't want him to get hurt, but like, if you're going to get hurt, it's good to skip this year's wide receiver draft because it is deep. And also, I wanted to note about Delanin Strong. 36 cornerbacks got taken in last year's draft, most of any position. That bodes well for them. And 33 wide receivers, which bodes well for Felton and Jennings in next year's draft as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, yep. Sam, do you have a baseball update for us before we sign this thing off?
Yeah, let me take a drink real quick.
Did we fall out of the rankings?
Yeah, we fell at the rankings. Okay. It's been a tough couple weeks. 3 straight ACC series losses. You are one of those was the sweep at home, getting swept at home versus Wake Forest. A few things can be true. 1, Virginia Tech played 3 incredibly tough series. Wake Forest is a top 10 team. Duke is a top 10 team. Georgia Tech is a very good team. Could make a regional.
And we should have won 2 games in that Duke series. Like, we at least could have.
You lose, you went, lost a game in 11 innings, and you were winning a game by a substantial margin on Sunday. Should have swept that series.
Could have swept the series for sure.
Bullpen pitching was very poor in that series. Against Georgia Tech, you were up 7-2 in that game, in the second half part of that game. Didn't win that game. Against Wake Forest, you were in all of those games until the end. Midway through all of those games, Tech was in it. The bullpen pitching has been pretty bad the last couple weeks. I think part of that is they've started to scramble a bit in games. And then another part of it is they're not getting starters to go deep enough. Starters are only going about 5-6 innings. You really need those guys to try to get to 6-7. And they haven't been able to do that. That's put a little bit too much pressure on the bullpen against 2 of the best offenses in the country in Duke and Wake Forest, and Georgia Tech, one of the best offenses in the ACC. So that hasn't worked out. This team is still in good position to make a regional. They've done phenomenal, not slipping up in a midweek game. No one else in the ACC has really been able to say that. Duke got massacred by Campbell. Wake Forest lost to Elon. UVA has lost midweeks to like Massachusetts and stuff like that. So it's okay. So they're in line to make a regional still.
Is this true? Are they having tryouts for intramural, like for on relievers? Or is that a joke?
I think that's a joke. To be honest, I don't think the issue is, I don't think talent is the issue with the relief staff. I think utilization has been an issue. And I think that's also a very young staff. Got a lot of freshmen and sophomores pitching out there.
Yeah.
The good news for Virginia Tech is they have a very tough series starting tomorrow at Chapel Hill.
Big series.
I think you need to, if you want to be a two seed in a regional, I think you need to win that series. If they do win that series, they're up there at the top of the Coastal with Duke and UNC. If you lose that series, you kind of fall behind UVA and you're more in line with Georgia Tech in Miami. After that UNC series, they have a home series against Miami, and then they have the road series at UVA. UVA has been kind of like Tech this year, up and down a bit, and Miami has been up and down a bit. I think they can beat Miami at home in that series. I think the UVA series is a toss-up. UVA is a very good team, but they have not been able to put a whole weekend together. So the path is still there for Virginia Tech. Interestingly enough, the two latest projections that I have seen for NCAA regionals has Virginia Tech as a two seed. One of them in the Morgantown regional playing West Virginia, and the other one in the Lexington regional playing Kentucky.
Okay, then. Okay. Kentucky, juicy. Our favorite school these days. So you know who is feeling really good about the way this draft has played out? Bo Nix.
Me, because they haven't mentioned the Browns once.
But think about Bo Nix. He could have been waiting until round two to see all these guys taken.
Is he going to get drafted here to the Broncos?
This would be crazy. If we have six quarterbacks taken in the top 12 picks, that would be ridiculous. Think about the idea of watching Auburn 2 years, 3 years ago, and then Bo Nix going 12th in the draft. Think about that possibility.
I saw him with Oregon this year. He looked really good. Bit of a check down merchant.
All right, but Sam, I have a trivia question for you as we're closing this out. After Bo Nix, who is the next quarterback on the big board? Who, like, just give me a name you think it could be. When I saw the name, I just kind of laughed, but it makes sense.
After Bo Nix, who? Okay, wouldn't be Jordan Travis.
He's farther down. Yeah,
he's further down. Oh my gosh.
There's actually two guys that are close. I'm looking for a specific name, but Michael Pratt is not the next one, but he's just after
Michael,
this guy.
I was going to say Michael Pratt is right there. Oh my gosh. I have no idea.
It's a transfer quarterback that played for Shane Beamer.
Oh my gosh. It's Spencer Rattler.
He's the next quarterback listed on the draftable quarterbacks on CBS right now after Bo Nix, and it's a gap. So Bo Nix was listed at 38, by the way, overall in the mocks. And then Spencer's 80, but Spencer is loving this right now because it means he's probably going to be a second round pick.
Yeah. Okay. So there was your trivia question. I'm going to spring this on you real quick. I know we're getting to about an hour and a half. So
yeah, we're almost done. Don't worry, people.
One of my favorite podcasts, as a Cleveland fan, there's a baseball podcast called the Selby is Godcast. It's a weird name, but it has a lot of lore. Look it up. They do a segment called it's now Random Guardian of the Day, where one of them picks a random Cleveland baseball player from the past 20 years, and the other one has to figure it out. They do it based on just stats. Tell you the year they played, and they'll tell you stats. And yes, Brian, ACC baseball is loaded this year.
Very loaded.
So I want to start Random Hokie of the Pod.
Okay.
And I'm going to list, and because if I list the year, I think it'll give it away. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to list basic stats. It is going to be a player since 2000. And then I'm going to give you a little fun fact about that player.
Okay. And then I have to try to guess who it is.
That'll steer you in the right direction, right? So here's tonight's. This player played for, I'll tell you the number of seasons they played at Virginia Tech. So he played for 4 seasons. In those 4 seasons, he had 186 total tackles, 6 total interceptions, and a fumble recovery. His best game as a Hokie came against Rutgers, where he had a pick 6. His little fun fact is he was drafted in the 6th round of the NFL draft, and he went to the same high school as I did.
Oh my God. There is just like no way I'm going to get this. I'm trying to think. So this has to be like, this has to be an old, did we have a pick 6 in this year's Rutgers game? Can you tell me that?
No, our defense didn't get a stop.
Okay. I didn't think so. So this is an old Big East. This is an old Big East.
Since 2000.
Yeah, but like, okay. All right. But it's we haven't played Rutgers. Like, I guess we played them in that bowl game, right? God, man, I don't know. 186 tackles, that does me no freaking good. When you said pick 6, I was thinking like Motua Puaka or something like
I'll tell you what, his junior year, he had 5 interceptions and was all ACC.
Give me 1 second. 5 interceptions. That's a lot of interceptions.
Mm-hmm. He was a good, he's a good player.
I don't know, Kendall Fuller.
Oh, no. I'll give you one more hint. Played his balls off.
Oh God, it's the kid from the Cincinnati game. The other Fuller brother.
No.
Oh wait, no. The what's his name? I know this.
This is exactly how it goes on that podcast.
It's killing me because I can picture like Bud talking to you, like, I think he played his nuts off, right?
Played his nuts off. That's what the quote was. I'll give you another hint. His number was part of Virginia Tech trying to start a number tradition with player jerseys. Tech tried to, like, LSU has the number 7. Uh-huh. Tech tried to have this number be like passed down year over year.
And yeah, was it the number 4?
Mm-mm.
No, I don't. You're just gonna have to tell me. But as soon as you tell me, I'm just gonna be mad.
Antone Exum.
Yeah,
run
yeah.
High school graduate, played at Virginia Tech from 2010 to 2013.
He did have some flashes of being excellent.
Drafted by the Vikings. Excuse me, Vikings.
I remember watching him when he had to play early in his career because out of necessity. And then, that was that Cincinnati game quote in FedEx, right? With they played his nuts off. Yeah,
guy played his nuts off
because he got the pass on him at the last second. What was Exum's number? What number was that? I don't remember that. They tried to make number one
a thing. They had Macho Harris, Aaron Green, then it was Antone, and then had a couple other guys. Reggie Floyd had it for a year. They tried to make number one a thing. It didn't.
For the DBs specifically?
Yeah, and then we tried to have 25 for special teams, but then it's not really for special teams anymore. It's just for whoever they like that week.
Yeah. That was a good one, and I should have got it. It's just like, oh, man. I like that game though.
So what I'm gonna do going forward is put it out on Twitter that day, and I'm just gonna ask you politely not to look at the.
Yeah, yeah, that's fine. I won't look it up but I also don't want to like. I gotta have a time limit because we're doing a podcast, right? Like, so if I'll get like a minute to think about it, and then we'll move on. But I love the game anyway. That's gonna do it for the pod. Did Bo Nix just get taken? I don't know what just happened at 12.
Let me backtrack a little bit.
Oh my God,
he did.
Oh, now I remember seeing his spiky hair on the screen. So 6 quarterbacks in the top 12. We just witnessed history, I have to imagine, right? That has never happened.
There's no way. There's no way that's happened
before. So that is Brock Bowers taking number 13. Is he going number 13?
Yep.
The pick's in.
Brock Bowers.
Yep. Yeah, they're giving him the hat. To Las Vegas. All right, that's going to do it for the pod. Make sure you hit us on Twitter. It's @2DVT. on Instagram, also at 2DeepVT, and subscribe to the YouTube channel, subscribe on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And until next time, go Hokies.
Go Hokies.